We have only one more laboratory exercise, which I guess is Monday. Yeah, Monday.
Question.
Yeah.
So, for the extra exam, we have to do that link, and then that'll tell us on delivery, and then when we just take the test one.
As soon as you hand in number 5.
Wait, what is he talking about?
He's talking about the option to retake. All right, now we're going to talk about immunity today. Animal immunity. So how we are able to protect ourselves, basically. And some of this information is important for biotechnology reasons because we take advantage of how the immune system works to do stuff for biotechnological reasons that are completely different from why the immune system works to begin with. But we take advantage of the fact that the immune system is a very specific way of recognizing particles. So I want to explain the basics of how animal immunity works. In the first slide, this is just a picture of a phagocytic cell engulfing some other sort of cell, probably a bacterium. But the word phagocytic means cell eating. So phagocyte, which is the corresponding noun of that adjective, phagocyte is a general word that means a cell that is able to engulf invading particles or debris by surrounding it, basically eating it. That process is called phagocytosis. So it's not only for immunity that cells are able to undergo, or that cells do undergo phagocytosis. It's for other reasons as well. But the immune system includes a lot of phagocytic cells, and we see one right here in light blue. This is one cell engulfing this yellow cell, in this case because this yellow cell is not a cell that's part of this organism. It's a cell that is viewed as an intruder, basically, could do some harm. I forgot my remote. Alright, now slide 2 is a rundown, quick summary of immunity itself. And what you see here in the two colors, two major colors, is that immunity comes in two varieties, innate and adaptive. Now, what does the word innate mean in general?
Natural.
It means inborn. Natal means of birth. So innate immunity is immunity that an animal is born with. And as you see here, all animals have some degree of innate immunity. Adaptive immunity, on the other hand, is not immunity that an animal is born with. It's immunity that is earned by living, in a sense. It comes gradually with exposure to various things. And not all animals have this adaptive immunity. But we do because we are vertebrates. All vertebrates, so all mammals, all birds, all reptiles, they all have adaptive immunity. all amphibians as well. Not insects, though, for instance, which are not vertebrates. All right, so those are the two major subdivisions of immunity itself. But they differ in how they work, not just in how they're named. Innate immunity recognizes basic properties of things that are pathogens. Pathogen refers to basically anything that can do harm to an organism. Patho means abnormal. So pathogen means causing abnormality. Pathogens make you sick, in other words. And the basis for recognizing these pathogens is interaction between proteins. Proteins that act as receptors and therefore have a specific shape to them. Those receptors are proteins of the animal that is being invaded. The receptors of an animal, your receptors in your immune system, recognize basic shapes that other organisms, the pathogens themselves, have. All right? And you're born with those receptors, so immediately you can start recognizing a certain group of pathogens. Since those receptors are already there, the mechanism is already in place, this is a quick response, which is important because you don't want to allow an invading cell, a bacterium for instance, to start reproducing so that there's an army of those bacteria. You want to be able to kill them as soon as they come in so they don't get a foothold. Okay, now, innate immunity, as far as structure is concerned, as far as the actual materials that give you innate immunity are concerned, consists of barrier defenses and internal defenses. Barrier defenses, as the name implies, consists of blocking things from getting into your body. So the skin is the major part of the barrier defenses. The skin really is the barrier between you and everything else. Skin is part of you, but it's also the barrier. And it's a pretty tight membrane, meaning not very many things are able to get through the skin. And the skin secretes fluid that is slightly acidic compared to the rest of your body. Not nearly as acidic as the stomach, but acidic compared to most of the body. And that film of acid, basically, that you have on your skin is called the acid mantle. And that is not very friendly to a lot of microorganisms trying to invade you. So that itself is a defense. Mucous membranes refer to coverings on the body that produce mucus. Mucus is really thick and things stick to it. Doesn't allow them to move very quickly, and while they're stuck there, basically, then other cells can attack them and kill them. And so those are the barrier defenses. Internally, if things get through your skin or into your body through mucous membranes, then you have all kinds of cells and products of cells to hopefully kill the ones that make it through. So there are various kinds of phagocytic cells. Like I said, that's a general term. There's many different kinds of phagocytic cells. There are also natural killer cells that you have that will basically drill holes into bacteria as they invade And when you put holes into a bacterium, it just bursts. And then you have antimicrobial proteins which are involved in killing these bacteria. So natural killer cells make antimicrobial proteins, but other cells do as well. You also have the inflammatory response, which is what causes redness, pain, and swelling when you puncture yourself with a thorn, for instance, or something. That's the inflammatory response. Seems like a drawback to us because we don't like the pain, the swelling, but all of those things are actually a way to help kill the cells that could be invading you through that injury. The pain doesn't. The pain tells you not to do that again, but the other things are involved in killing the invaders. All right, now in adaptive immunity, you have a lot more specificity. What I mean by that is that receptors involved in recognizing invaders are very specific, and they'll recognize just one or maybe a couple kinds of very closely related particles. Which means to have this specificity, you have to have a lot more kinds of receptors. And you're not born with those receptors. You make them throughout the course of your lifetime. And the nice thing is that you make them randomly. Every day you make new versions of receptors. But if you are exposed to something that you already have a receptor for, then your body has a way of triggering cells to make many, many more of exactly those kinds of receptors. So that if you're ever exposed to that thing again, you'll already have a lot of receptors on hand to recognize that thing. And that's why it's adaptive. We adapt by being exposed to pathogens, and if we survive the exposure, putting steps into place to make sure that a second exposure later on can be dealt with a lot more efficiently. And there's two parts to that. The humoral response and the cell-mediated response. Humoral is the adjective of humor, but humor in this sense has nothing to do with comedy. Humor means a fluid. It's an old word for fluid. And so what we're talking about by a humoral response is involving the blood or the lymph. Now, lymph is its own fluid. It comes from blood, but blood is in its own blood vessels. You also have a whole extra set of vessels called lymphatic vessels, part of your lymphatic system, that carries lymph around. Well, the humoral response involves proteins called antibodies that are continuously circulating throughout your body in the blood and in the lymph. Cell-mediated response, on the other hand, as the name implies, directly involves some cells. Now, antibodies are made by cells, but they're released by cells. Cell-mediated response involves receptors that are still part of cells. They're still on cell surfaces. So the cells are actively busy in the process of mediating this response. And this involves various kinds of cytotoxic cells, which simply means cells that are toxic to other cells. They kill them. All right. Let's look at some pictures now to explain all this. Slide 3 just shows you the process of phagocytosis. So this big cell is some sort of phagocytic cell. And the pathogens here are the purple things. They're being recognized by this phagocytic cell as an invader. And so in phagocytosis, little arms are formed out on the surface of the phagocytic cell that extend around the pathogen until the arms touch each other and basically melt into each other because they're made of the same material, cell membrane,
and then all of a sudden now you have a little vesicle or vacuole, a little bag made out of membrane that's inside the cell and that contains the pathogen. So it's away from the other cells of the body, and now this phagocytic cell can simply merge this little vesicle containing the pathogens with another vesicle called a lysosome containing enzymes that will destroy that cell. When you merge these two, you mix the enzymes with the pathogen and the damage is undone or it's prevented. Pathogens don't get a chance to cause any damage. So this works well as long as you catch things early, basically. Because as soon as these pathogens, which are usually bacteria, but some other, could be other kinds of microbes as well, as soon as they start reproducing, then you have a bigger and bigger problem. That's when you actually get the disease, when they win the battle, when they start reproducing faster than you can kill them. Okay, slide 4. Picture of the lymphatic system that I was just talking about. All of these green tubes are not blood vessels. These are lymphatic vessels. And they run side by side with your blood vessels. But a big difference between the circulatory system and the lymphatic system is that the circulatory system circulates blood continuously. So it goes through arteries, then capillaries, then veins, back to the heart, and then around again. Lymphatic system doesn't work that way. Instead of being continuous tubes that form a circuit, lymphatic vessels are blind-ended. So they're like little tubes that have ends in the body. These are very small tubes. But you see right here, all these little blind ends. Those blind ends pick up fluid and then eventually return it to the blood. But the fluid originally comes from the blood. So as blood is pumped through arteries and then smaller arteries called arterioles, and then finally the smallest of the vessels, which are capillaries, when it gets to capillaries, that's where exchange takes place between the blood and the cell. So oxygen is dropped off to the cells, carbon dioxide is picked up from the cells, nutrients enter the cells, and so on. In that process, these capillaries are so tiny that they're leaky, and the pressure is pretty high in there from the heart. So fluid gets squeezed out of these capillaries. It's mostly water, but it's not completely water. And therefore, you're really losing some volume from your blood continuously. Well, if you didn't have a mechanism for putting that fluid back into the blood, then you would have swelling in all the tissues. That swelling is called edema. And it can eventually kill you. Well, that's one reason why we have the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system collects this lymph, which is the fluid that squeezes out of the blood, and then the tubes, these lymphatic vessels, get bigger and bigger, just like tributaries to bigger rivers, and eventually it all comes back to vessels in the shoulder, veins called subclavian veins, that are under the clavicles, and it dumps all this lymph back into the blood. So if you didn't have these lymphatic vessels working, you would slowly swell in your tissues so you couldn't breathe anymore. But also, the lymphatic system, if you think of it as a system of roadways, has hundreds of these little orange things on this picture, which are lymph nodes. And lymph nodes are enlargements within these vessels. You see one close up right here. On the upper right, you see the fluid being squeezed out of the red blood vessels and then coming into the green lymph vessels. But on the bottom here, this is an enlarged lymph node. And as the lymph is traveling through this, since it's large,
it slows down in there, just like when a river goes from, you know, the rapids of a river is caused by the fact that it's narrow right there. When you have a wide part of the river, all the water slows down because there's more volume there. Same thing here. This fluid slows down, and that gives the cells that live in this lymph node a chance to destroy any invading cells that might have made its way in there. So lymph nodes are full of phagocytic cells and other cells of the immune system. All right. Let's go to slide 5 and look at a puncture wound. So this is a splinter, piece of wood coming through the skin, and this is a cartoon, obviously, but I was looking at a microphotograph of a pin recently that looked pretty much just like this, even though it was a real photograph. Showed the surface of the pin, and there were just hundreds of bacteria on it, which is why when you stick yourself with something like that, it's potentially dangerous. These green bacteria were not able to get through the skin before it was broken. That's the barrier defense. But when you break that barrier, all of a sudden you have to now recruit cells that are already inside your body to hopefully kill them before they can start multiplying to high numbers. And so in response to this injury, you have a couple kinds of cells working here. Mast cells in red, macrophages in purple. A macrophage, by the way, is a specific kind of phagocytic cell. Macro meaning big, phage meaning eat, just like in phagocytic. Well, the mast cells, in response to an invasion, release these red signaling molecules, and macrophages also release signaling molecules. These signaling molecules are a way to tell cells that are in the bloodstream that there's been an injury in this area, and therefore some of these cells, neutrophils, that are in the blood, will receive these signals and come out of the bloodstream just to where that injury occurred and help in the job of engulfing these invading bacteria. So the macrophages are not only releasing signals, they're also phagocytizing or eating these bacteria. The neutrophils, which have been called to the scene, are different kinds of phagocytic cells. They help in eating them as well. But if you wash the wound as soon as it happens, you just mechanically get rid of a lot of numbers of bacteria. If you ignore it, it gives a much harder job for these cells to do, because there's still a lot more bacteria remaining that need to be eaten. That's how it happens, though. And eventually it will heal so that the barrier is put back intact. All right, now let's talk about some sorts of cells that are important in adaptive immunity. Slide 6. First of all, the whole blood has two major categories of cells in it: red blood cells and white blood cells. There's only one kind of red blood cell, so all your red blood cells are the same. And they don't have anything to do with immunity. Almost all of your blood cells are red blood cells, but their job is to carry oxygen and carbon dioxide around. Deliver oxygen to the cells, pick up carbon dioxide from the cells, take it back to the lung so you can get rid of it. The minority of cells are the white blood cells, and even though they are one category of blood cell, there's different kinds of them. There's 5 major kinds, and then there's subcategories within them. Well, B cells and T cells are 2 types of white blood cells. And you've probably heard of them because they've been in the news, especially since AIDS. They're really a lot more famous than they used to be. But anyway, the reason they're called T cells, is because they mature in the thymus, which is an organ in your heart area. It's much bigger when you're young, gets smaller as you develop. By late adulthood, it's really small, actually.
But T stands for thymus. Now, all blood cells are created in marrow, in your bones. But depending on which kind of blood cells they are, they get put into different places. T cells, as soon as they're produced, travel to the thymus, where they live for a while so that they develop and mature. And that's why they're called T cells. B cells, actually the B stands for bursa of fibrosis, which is a thing that we don't even have. It's an organ that's in chickens, and that's where they were discovered, so that's why they were called B cells. But it's probably easier to think of B cells as B is just standing for blood, because that's where B cells end up. They're white blood cells that circulate through the body, start in marrow, just like all blood cells, but circulate as part of the blood. And there's differences, but there's similarities between these two types of cells. You can see in the picture that the purple things hanging off of the surface of these two cells are antigen receptors. Well, what is an antigen? It can be just about anything. Antigen is a word that simply refers to a particle that is not part of that organism's self. So an antigen is a particle from some other origin. An antigen receptor is a protein that's produced by the animal and that has the right shape to be able to recognize a specific type of antigen. And that's why, as part of adaptive immunity, in order to learn the different kinds of antigens that you're exposed to throughout life, you need to make cells that produce different kinds of antigen receptors. You're not born with all those different types. Well, B cells and T cells both produce antigen receptors that are then put into their membranes so that they're pointing outward and can recognize the antigens. But you can see here that the shape of the receptors is different. B cells have these Y-shaped receptors, T cells a simpler shape. That's one difference, but we'll see some other differences in other pictures. In slide 7, we have a close-up view of an antigen receptor from a B cell. So these are B cell antigen receptors. That's one thing you can call them. But B cells, when they produce these antigen receptors, they can either keep them attached to the cell itself, like you see here, in which case they would be called a B cell antigen receptor, or they can release that whole receptor so that it's now a protein on its own. And when that Y-shaped protein is on its own, still acting as a receptor but not part of a cell, it's called an antibody. So B cells make your antibodies. But they can also keep them attached to the cell. All right, well, if you look at the detail of the antigen receptor itself, the purple Y-shaped thing, notice that there are parts labeled V and parts labeled C. V here stands for variable. C stands for constant. What is a protein made out of?
Series of amino acids.
Right, amino acids. DNA tells the cell how to make the protein, but the protein is made out of amino acids. And so this Y-shaped thing really, if you looked at even closer detail, would be a bunch of amino acids stuck together end to end. Well, the constant regions here are made of the same sequence of amino acids for all antibodies, all antigen receptors. It doesn't change. The variable part, though, whatever those amino acids are, is different for each different kind of receptor. And that's what gives each antigen receptor its specificity. That's what allows it to recognize just a very certain kind of antigen. And so antibodies are different from each other simply because the V shape, the V regions are different. The C region is the same for all antibodies. Okay, let's look at them in work in slide 8. Here you have a B cell that has attached to it B cell antigen receptors, and the very tips of antigen receptors are, that's where the V regions are. That's what actually recognizes antigens, like I said. Well, you see that happening right here. This orangish cell on the bottom is some sort of pathogen. So this is not part of the animal. This is a non-self cell. An important part of the immune system is to recognize the difference between self and non-self. An animal doesn't have just one kind of cell, right? It has many different kinds of cells, but they're all part of the same organism. So the immune system needs to recognize all those different kinds of cells as still being part of yourself. And therefore, it views other kinds of cells as non-self. This pathogen is a non-self cell, and it will have on its surface various particles. Those particles mostly are proteins, but antigens don't have to be proteins. They just usually are. They can be any sort of particle. In any case, these antigens have places on them that are directly recognizable. That's what epitope refers to here. An epitope is a part of an antigen that is directly recognizable by shape and that fits nicely into the tip of an antigen receptor. That's what's occurring here. Well, you see that the B cell is actively involved in doing that here. So what you see on the upper left here is part of the cell-mediated response, because the cell is taking part at the time. On the upper right, you have the humoral response, because even though the B cell is involved, it's not actively involved with this recognition process at the moment. And that's because all the B cell does in this case is release the antibodies. When the antibodies are on their own, they are just components of the blood. And therefore, this is the humoral response, right? But as far as the recognition of the antigen by the antibody is concerned, it happens exactly the same way, whether the antigen receptor is part of the cell or whether it's on its own as an antibody. Now, the bottom part of this shows you that what I've already told you, antibodies are very specific. So even if the pathogen is there and it has antigens that can be recognized by antibodies in your body, if those specific antibodies are not there at the moment, there's going to be no recognition. Right? Antibody C, as far as this pathogen is concerned, is useless. Doesn't recognize these antigens. But two different antigens on this pathogen are being recognized by antibodies that you already have. So the idea here is that if you make a hell of a lot of different kinds of antibodies, whether you're exposed to antigens or not, you just continuously make all kinds of different antibodies, each kind of which you only have a few copies of, then these are circulating through your blood. And if something invades you, you might not have exactly the right antibody right there at the moment. But since they're all circulating, eventually this thing will come into contact with the antigen it matches. And when that happens, that tells the body, we need to make a lot more of exactly this kind of antibody. That's part of adaptive immunity. Slide 9 is a picture of really just a close-up of the other kind of major antigen receptor, which is made by T cells. It has a simpler shape. It's not a Y, it's more of an I shape, but it still has a constant region and a variable region. So it's still made the same way. It's just made by different cells and has a different shape. One big difference, though, is that these T cell antigen receptors are not released by T cells. They're produced by T cells and kept on the surface of the T cell itself. Just like B cells can do, but B cells also release them. T cells don't release them. So these things never turn into antibodies. They are just T cell receptors the whole time. Always have a cell involved. All right, now slide 10 gives you some more detail about how these T cells can actually use their receptors. Upper left is a phagocytic cell, right? Because it's eating this pathogen. And that's a major function of phagocytic cells. They get rid of pathogens by eating them. But since pathogens, which are usually microorganisms, can easily divide into two new pathogens, since they can reproduce quickly, in other words, chances are if a phagocytic cell recognizes a pathogen, it's probably not going to be the only one there, right? So it would be foolish just to eat it and think the problem is solved. Therefore, these phagocytic cells, as they're destroying, engulfing one pathogen, they pick the little antigens off of the surface of this pathogen, and they package it, they package the antigen with an antigen receptor, I mean an antigen display fragment, this green thing, and put it onto the surface of the phagocytic cell. In other words, while they're destroying the pathogen, they put a little flag outside saying, I just destroyed this kind of pathogen. It's probably not the only one, so be on the lookout for exactly this kind of antigen. That's what this thing is doing on the surface. Well, that will do some good to the body as long as there is an appropriate kind of T cell that just happens to make the right kind of T cell antigen receptor that is able to recognize the antigen being displayed by this phagocytic cell. And most T cells won't, because all T cells make their own different kind of T cell antigen receptor. But since it's circulating in the blood, you might have one that comes along and says, yes, I recognize that. If that happens, which is what's happening right here, then that's going to trigger this T cell into action. That's not shown here, but that's what will happen next. The bottom is just a close-up of what's happening. The reason that an antigen is able to be recognized by an antigen receptor is because there's a very specific fit in shape between antigen and antigen receptor. This is just the display, though, of the antigen itself. All right, should we go through this whole thing in one shot, or you want a break? Okay. All right, let's go to slide 11 then. He was the first vote. Yeah, you gotta be fast. But even if we do it in one shot, though, I still want to put the test up for you to look at. We'll do that at the end. Okay, slide 11. I told you about the variable parts of these things, of these antigen receptors, which is what makes them different from each other. Well, in your body, you make millions of different kinds of antigen receptors, which means that you have millions of different kinds of B and T cells. Millions of different kinds, not millions of B and T cells. You have billions of B and T cells. But you have millions of different kinds of them. And you just have a few of each kind. This slide explains how you can have millions of different kinds of cells, even though you only have thousands of genes. The DNA in a human contains only about 20,000 genes, which means
you're only able to make roughly 20,000 kinds of proteins. But I just told you that you make millions of different kinds of antigen receptors, which are proteins. So that means there must be a way of shuffling the deck. And that's exactly what's happening here. At the top, that strand, blue strand, is the DNA of a brand new B cell. Okay, B cells are produced by the marrow. And all B cells start out the same in your body. They're determined by your DNA. All B cells have a complete set of DNA. Not only all the other genes that never change, but also this part of the DNA that involves making the antibody or the antigen receptor. That's the DNA that's shown here. The DNA that's responsible for making a specific kind of antigen receptor has variable parts in it. I mean, V parts in it and J parts in it. And you have a complete set in a B cell that's just created. But to make different kinds of antibodies, you have to randomly get rid of some V's and some J's. In other words, this is like having a full deck of cards to begin with, and then you just draw certain cards from that deck, forming a hand, right? That each time you do that, if you do it randomly, you have a different hand, even though you're using the same deck each time. That's how cells are able to make millions of different antibodies, because there are millions of different ways that you can choose from this deck. So even though all B cells start out the same, each one differently and randomly selects which of these V's get eliminated and which of these J's get eliminated, keeping just some of the V's and J's, which are then sewn together to make the DNA that's going to determine that kind of B cell. Once that happens, that B cell only has this modified DNA, and it can never go back into making any other kind of antibody. So this determines which kind of B cell it's going to be. That's how there can be millions of different kinds of B cells. But once it's determined, then this modified DNA, when it gets transcribed, this is a gene now that gets transcribed into messenger RNA. The introns get taken out, and you put the ends on the messenger RNA. Now you have the messenger RNA, which goes to a ribosome, as usual, for all proteins, and the protein is made. But in this case, the protein that's made is the antigen receptor. All right? So what this means then is that once a B cell modifies its DNA, it's only ever able to make that kind of antigen receptor. B cells only make one kind of antigen receptor. They can keep making it, many copies of it, but that's the only kind they can make. So this explains why you only have one or just a small number of B cells of a certain type. Just like, you know, if you think about it in terms of the lottery, there's only going to be a certain number of people with those numbers that get picked, right? Every lottery ticket is different. So you have all these lottery players floating around in the blood. Only one of them holds the right ticket, or a very few number hold the right ticket to be able to match up to an antigen that might be in the body because it's part of a pathogen. That makes sense? Now the same exact thing is happening for T-cell antigen receptors, just in different kinds of cells. And the shape is different, of course. You make these Y-shaped ones for B cells, I-shaped ones for T cells. Okay, now slide 12 shows you two different kinds of B cells of the millions of different kinds that you have. These are two different kinds. And notice that each cell is making only one kind of antigen receptor. Well,
In this case, in this example, the purple one is the one that has the right shape to recognize this antigen that's being invading the body. So this kind of cell is the one that gets chosen to make more of its antibodies. You don't need more of these green ones because you're not exposed to whatever the green thing fits yet. You might later. Might be later. But this one is selected, basically, by being exposed to that kind of antigen. That selects for that kind of antigen receptor-producing cell. And when that happens, basically that's a signal to the cell for that type of B cell to quickly undergo cell division. In other words, make more of exactly that kind of cell. When a cell undergoes mitosis, it makes two versions of the original cell that are identical to each other. So you don't rely on drawing the same hand again, which would be almost impossible. Instead, you take that hand and duplicate it by making another copy of exactly that kind of cell. So now that this group of identical cells is called a clone. Clone is a group of genetically identical cells. And the two arrows on the bottom here show you that there's two different uses for the cells that are produced when they're exposed to an antigen. They're all genetically identical. But some of those cells of the clone will go on to become memory cells. And as the name implies, these cells are important for remembering that you have been exposed to that kind of antigen and therefore might be exposed again in the future. So this group of memory cells just stays on hand for years, maybe decades, maybe even a lifetime. These memory cells are there, already on hand with their with the proper kinds of antigen receptors made to recognize that kind of antigen should you be exposed again. But some other cells of this same group, which are genetically identical to the memory cells, will become plasma cells instead. It's just the difference is just the job they're performing. The plasma cells aren't there to hang around as memory cells. They are there to make antibodies. Well, no, remember that the antibodies are exactly the same thing as the B cell antigen receptors. They're just called antibodies because they're released by the cells. So these antibodies can stay on hand indefinitely in the blood. This is exactly how we can protect ourselves either naturally by being exposed to something and surviving it, or with intervention, medical intervention, as an immunization or a vaccination. When we get immunized or vaccinated, what we're doing is intentionally exposing ourselves to a certain kind of antigen. Spurring the body into producing a hell of a lot of cells that recognize that antigen so that we have an army of antibodies on hand already in case we actually do get exposed naturally to that antigen. Now that could you could do that by actually giving the body the dangerous antigen, but that would be defeating the purpose, right? Because you're trying to protect yourself from the danger. So in an immunization or vaccination, you introduce into the body a slightly modified form of the antigen, so it doesn't actually give you the disease, but it's enough of the right shape so it spurs the same kind of cells into action so that you'll have the correct kind of antibodies to recognize the disease-causing antigen if you're ever exposed to it. And that's why you're then immune. If you get exposed to it, you'll have an army of antibodies on hand to take care of it before it gets a foothold. Okay, slide 13. This weirdly shaped cell, of course, is phagocytic. All of those extensions of its self are involved in phagocytosis, engulfing antigens. and the pathogens being engulfed. But like I said, phagocytic cells can act as antigen-presenting cells, doing exactly what I described before, by putting a flag out there with an antigen on it saying, I have one of these in me. Look for different versions of it. So that a T cell that has just the right kind of antigen receptor happens along and recognizes that antigen. This is called a helper T cell. It's a helper T cell because when it recognizes the antigen that this antigen presenting cell is presenting, it responds by releasing chemicals. Chemicals that will serve as signals to still other cells of the immune system to come into action. Well, these chemicals are called cytokines. Cyto means what?
Cell.
Cell. And kine means movement, like kinetic energy or cinema. So cytokines means things that get cells moving. Well, the kinds of cells that are affected by cytokines that receive that information are other types of T cells called cytotoxic T cells. These are ones that can directly kill the types of cells that have that kind of antigen on them. And B cells can also be affected by cytokines. B cells are spurred into action to produce antibodies, release them into the blood, and therefore that's part of humoral immunity. The cytotoxic T cells are directly killing the cells that have the antigen, so that's part of cell-mediated immunity. All right, slide 14. I told you at the beginning of this slideshow that one way that you can kill cells that are invading you is by drilling holes into them. Actually, it's not really so much that holes are drilled into the surface as proteins are embedded into the surface. And those proteins are called perforins. Perforins, which are individual proteins, get together to form a complex that actually forms a pore. So as these perforins are embedded into the surface of the cell that is invading you, they form a little circle which has a hollow interior. They form a little tunnel, in other words. That's a hole in the cell. When this happens several times, you have several holes in the cell, and the bacterium, which it was usually is, releases so much fluid that it'll kill it. So basically it just causes it to collapse. And then this thing is no longer dangerous, that individual cell is no longer dangerous, and it's just digested as food, basically. But it's important for the cell, for the body to recognize that this particular kind of cell has been killed, therefore look for the same exact kind of cell. That's why you also have messages sent about exactly what kind of antigen is present. Okay, slide 15. We've already talked about helper cells, helper T cells. That's what's docking here to the antigen that's being presented. It's releasing cytokines, like I've said, but in this case, the cytokines are telling B cells to make antibodies. Well, it's not any kind of B cell that's going to respond to these cytokines. Only a B cell that has docked onto this helper T cell will be able to receive these cytokines as signals. And the only kind of B cell that can dock onto this activated helper T cell is a B cell that has the correct kind of antigen receptor to recognize that antigen that's on the T cell. So, in this case, you have three cells involved. You have the macrophage, which originally ate the pathogen, it presents the antigen to the T cell. The T cell now
presents that information to a B cell, and the B cell makes a bunch of antibodies in response and also starts reproducing itself. So the multiple B cells now can serve as either memory B cells, which stick around producing that same kind of antigen receptor, or plasma cells that make a bunch of the antigen receptors and release them as antibodies. So no new information here, it's just showing you more detail of the same stuff. Okay, slide 16 is even more detail. These are three different ways that the body can protect itself against various invaders. On the left, you have a virus, so it's not even a cell. Right? A virus is just DNA and protein. The outer protein has shapes on it that can be recognized by the body if you have the right kind of antibody. By the way, this is why you don't get the same kind of cold twice. Colds are caused by viruses. And when you get the cold, if you survive it, which we usually do, we make a bunch of antibodies that recognize that kind of virus. The thing is, viruses are so simple that when they mutate, they are pretty different from what they were originally. And so cold viruses are mutating every year, and that's why we can keep getting colds every year. We're getting a different cold because it's caused by a mutated virus that we don't already have the exact antibodies against. But anyway, this, when antibodies that you already have on hand bind to the antigens of a virus, it neutralizes it, inactivates it, takes it out of the picture. So that's one way, neutralization. Opsonization, the second one, refers to a way to make it a lot easier for phagocytic cells, like a macrophage, to engulf the cell. So basically, antigen receptors coat the surface of a cell that needs to be engulfed, and that changes the charge distribution on that thing, making the macrophage a lot easier to engulf it. That's opsonization. And then the third involves what's called the complement system. So this spaceship-looking thing on the top of the right picture is a complex of complement proteins that are attached to antigen receptors. And if the antigen receptors happen to be the right kind for an antigen that is being invading the body, then that will spur this whole complement system into action. And individual proteins of that complement system will be released. They'll embed into the cell, forming a pore complex, just like I've said before. That will kill this cell, but it won't do anything about any other cells, right? But the nice thing about these pores is that they quickly kill the cell. You put holes into a bacterium, it doesn't live long at all. I think 17 is the last slide, and what you have here is really the same thing happening that we've been talking about, but this is an allergic response. Well, an allergic response is really nothing more than hypersensitivity to some sort of antigen. In other words, the immune system overreacts. It puts too big an army on the battlefield against this thing, and therefore you have side effects of inflammation, for instance, congestion. These things are called allergens. They really are just antigens. They're shapes, they're particles from some non-self organism, but they are just called allergens simply because you have an over-response to them, so it's an allergic response.
Just because the name is different, though, doesn't mean anything is happening differently. You still have recognition of the allergen by antibodies that are in your body.
Histamine, though, is a chemical that's released by cells that recognize these allergens. And histamine is one of the major chemicals that causes the inflammatory response. Your body has the inflammatory response to help fight off the allergen, but that's what makes it a pain in the ass to the people that have the allergies. Especially when it's something, when the allergen is typically something that's not going to hurt you anyway, if you didn't recognize it. Non-allergic people deal with it modestly. They don't overreact, so they don't get the major inflammation. But that's also why drugs that are designed to undo this process are called antihistamines. They don't undo the recognition of the allergen, but they try to undo the effect of the histamine. Take it out of the play, and therefore you don't get the side effects of inflammation. Let me make sure that's the last slide. Tis. All right, I'll put the test up.